भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System. Today's text 44. Word meanings, samudharanti, uplift. Yea, those who, vipram, a brahmana or devotee. Sidantam, suffering from poverty. Matparayanam, surrender to me. Tan, those who have uplifted, Uddharishye, I will uplift, Nachirat, in the near future, Apadbhya, from all miseries, Now, a boat, Iva, like Arnavat, from the ocean. Samudarantiye vipram, Sidantam matparayanam Tanudarishyena chirad Apadbhyo narivarnavat Samudarantiye vipram Sidantam matparayanam Tanudesh udharishye tam udharishye na chirad apadbhyo narivarnavat samudharantiye vipram sidantam matparayanam Tan udharishye na chirad Apadbhyo narivarnavat Samudharantiye vipram Sidantam matparayanam Tanudharishena chirad Apadhyo narivarnavat Samudharantiye vipram Sidantam matparayanam Tanudharishena chirad Apadhyo nari vanavat Samudharantiye vipram Sidantam matparayanam Tan udharishena chirad Apadhyo nari vanavat Sidantam matparayanam Tan udharishena chirad Apadbhyo narivarnavat Samudharantiye vipram Sidantam matparayanam Uddharishena chirad Apadbhyo narivarnavat Translation, just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift the brahmanas and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. Purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. The Lord has described how brahmanas and devotees achieve the perfection of life, and now a similar perfection is offered to those who utilize their materialistic wealth to relieve the poverty-stricken condition of devotees and brahmanas. Although one may neglect the devotional service of the Lord to pursue a material life of sense gratification, one can rectify one's position by dedicating one's hard-earned money to the service of the Lord. Seeing the difficult austerities accepted by saintly persons, a pious person should make arrangements for their comfort, just as a boat saves hopeless people who have fallen into the ocean. Similarly, the Lord uplifts persons who have hopelessly fallen into the ocean of material attachment if they have been charitable to the brahmanas and devotees. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha Srila Prabhupada ki jai. One reason I say this prayer slowly is that I'm trying to teach people how to say it. We hear all these jana janas and gana ganas. And there's two words, jnana and anjana. Jnana, so it's jnananjana. Jnana means jnana, knowledge, and anjana means ointment. So the ointment of knowledge. It's not jana jana. Jana jana means people, people. One thing about mispronouncing things is you're saying something completely different than you're supposed to be saying. And sometimes it might even be bad. So maybe try to do it right. After 40 years, maybe learn Gyananjana. Anyway, enough upper odds for today. I'll move on. We just heard about the Brahmins and devotees. Well, Prabhupada often mixes these together. In fact, he says whenever Krishna's talking about brahmanas, he's really talking about devotees. Well, I was just reading a purport yesterday where Prabhupada says, well, even the impersonalists can be, you can call the impersonalists brahmanas, he says. Kind of give him a little bit, okay, we can call impersonalists brahmanas, we can call them brahmanas. But in so many places he'll say, actually, in that purport he says, but they can't be gurus. A Vaishnava guru nasat, Vaishnava Shvapacho Guru. One who is an impersonalist cannot be a guru. But even if you're a brahmana, you can't be a guru if you're an impersonalist. But even if you're born in a dog eater family, you can be. If you're a Vaishnava, then you can be a guru. So the non-Vaishnava brahmana can never be a guru. So in that sense, of course, that means he should never teach. At least shouldn't teach shastra. Can teach something, woodworking or something, but not shastra. Of course, the brahmanas, that's what they do, they teach. So we're hearing something about the brahmanas here, brahmanas and devotees, it's Prabhupada's, because in this verse today, it qualifies the brahmana as matparayanam, one who is surrendered to me. Sometimes I think about this word devotee. Of course, we say devotee. Something I've been thinking about in my work a lot of times, what I'm seeing is, because I've been doing, you know, editing for a long time, and there's certain, the word authorities, the gurus of words and language, they prescribe how words are supposed to be used and what's acceptable in formal good writing and so on. But what you find, and dictionaries also, they prescribe. Actually, dictionaries are written in two different ways. Some of them describe, and some of them prescribe. So some of them present how people use the language, and some present how you're supposed to use the language. So one thing I've seen over years is that language does tend to change. Things that weren't allowed 30 years ago Now it's become so popular that the authorities have kind of given up and they say, okay, you can pronounce it that way because everybody's pronouncing that way. We'll put it that way in the dictionary. So I was saying, well, we say devotees. Now it's not in the dictionary, not that pronunciation. It's devotee or devotee is the way it's supposed to be. So I thought, well, we'll know we've made it when they have the third pronunciation, devotee. When Webster's has devotee, then we'll know we've made it. Then I thought, there's so many kinds of devotees in this world, and devotees. You can be a devotee of horse racing and dog breeding and knitting or whatever. But to be a devotee, that's only for Krishna. There's only one kind of devotee. That's Krishna. That's for Krishna. So what is the idea of this word devotion, of course? Of course, devotee and devotion, the words are connected. So what does it mean to be devoted to something? For one thing, it just means that you're, well, devoted to it. It means you do that particular thing. It doesn't have to do with, when we talk about devotion, what do we think of? We think about love, which is one of the definitions. Of course, that's another thing about the dictionary. Sometimes you get so many, what was a word I was looking up the other day? It had like 87 different definitions. Some, I think it was take, some real common word, because you can use take in so many different ways. It's amazing. So the same thing with devotion. So devotion, it has to do with love. That's one definition. But the other aspect of devotion is dedication, you can say. If you're dedicated, if you stick to something, you're devoted to that thing. People are sometimes devoted to a cause. They give their life for a cause. So they put all their energy into that. So our devotion, of course, we think of it in both ways, really. You have to stick to it. So in that sense, you might say we're devotees if we're sticking to it. If we're sticking to the practices of Krishna consciousness, you can say that's devotion. In fact, sadhana bhakti, the sadhana itself makes the bhakti. Even if maybe the love hasn't come yet, you're not on the stage of raga anuga, it's not spontaneous. So the rati, the bhava hasn't come yet. But as long as you do it, then still you're surrendered to Krishna. Of course, that's the word the Prabhupada often used. The word surrender, for sharanam, mamekam sharanam braja. Of course, the word sharanam literally means shelter. I tend to like the word shelter a little bit better than surrender, because surrender is what you don't really want to do. Taking shelter, you want to do it. You're out in the pouring rain and you go in and take shelter. You don't think of it as surrendering. You think surrender is when, you grit your teeth and you're, okay, I'll do it. I don't want to do it. But of course, I don't think Prabhupada thought of it that way when he was using the word, but we may react to it in that way. Surrender means against your will, you surrender. But we take shelter of Krishna. And so that's the real Brahmana. Brahmana is one who takes shelter of Krishna and worships Krishna and, of course, ultimately gives one's heart to Krishna. That's where the Brahmana's satisfaction is. Brahmana doesn't need anything else. What is that verse? I was just reviewing it the other day. It's in the second chapter. Second canto, eighth chapter. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember the Sanskrit right now, but I'm forgetting it. Anyway, the verse says that the devotee who has taken shelter of Krishna to Krishna's lotus feet can never give up those lotus feet because they completely satisfy him. Just as a traveler, when we take shelter of his home, he arrives at home after a long journey, then he feels, now I'm home, I'm going to relax and light the fire and put my feet up and I'm not going out in that blizzard again. So the devotee is taking shelter of Krishna, then he feels, yes, I'm never going to give that up. How does it go? Sarva mukti pariklesha. Sarva mukta pariklesha. He feels that all my miseries have been taken away by taking shelter of Krishna. So I'm never going to give that up. So that's one idea with this matparayanam. The brahmanas, they feel like, I have everything. Like that verse in Bhagavad Gita, the yogi in samadhi reaches that stage where he thinks there's nothing yang labdha chaparam labham manyate nadikam tata yasmin stita nadukena guruna api vichalyate. He thinks there's nothing greater than this. How could there be anything greater than this? I have, of course, we're talking about a yoga here. That's just Atma or possibly Paramatma realization. He thinks, and you can't move him from that determination, from that position that he's in. So Krishna consciousness is like that. When there's actual realization, you can't move the person from that. So that's the person's satisfaction. So we're the Brahmins. The Brahmins are satisfied in that. So we're hearing about the Brahmins, different ways that they can live. There are different levels, actually. We heard that the highest level, the most renounced, or at least the most renounced or austere Brahmins, they just go to the marketplace or the fields and they pick up the grains. So when I hear things like that, my brain goes... And the first thing I think is, not much of a diet, is it? That's all you eat is those grains? And what about the poor wife and kids at home? Hey, Dad, what you got today? Oh, not more barley. Oh, barley soup again? Or barley broth? Because I don't know, there's maybe not too many cucumbers and whatever else hanging around. Maybe, actually. Sometimes they harvest the fields and they leave old vegetables behind. Or what devotees used to do. Actually, I know Jayananda Prabhu, he used to go to the produce market and ask for all the throw-out stuff, you know, the stuff that was too old. Sometimes grocery stores will do that too. They'll have old produce. It's a little too old. It's got some brown spots on it. So sometimes they'll just give it away. At least they used to. So maybe there's something else. But what an austere way to live. Just every day you go out. That's what you do. And picking up grains, I mean, how many can you get? One at a time, you know, one little piece of rice or one little piece of barley. It takes a little while to fill up your bag enough to... Probably don't want to have too many kids to feed when you've got to do it that way. Well, I started thinking of this, and I started thinking that so often I find it's so hard to get a picture of what, you know, the Vedic culture was. What was life like back then? How did things go on? We know, of course, it was agrarian-centered generally. That's why it said a Brahmin. Of course, a Brahmin's first occupation, they're supposed to perform sacrifices, and of course their teachers. And that's how one way that they maintain themselves. Prabhupada describes how they would just go door to door. Brahmana would go door to door, and they would. There are two things, especially Brahmins tended to be good at: astrology and medicine, medical science. And Prabhupada said, for the materialists, that's what they want to know. Basically, they want to know what's going to happen in the future. Am I going to make money? And can you keep me healthy? That's pretty much what they're concerned about. So if the brahmanas can help them with that, then they'll give them some donation. And that's how the brahmanas were able to maintain themselves. So, but I think that's some picture. We hear these different kinds of things, and at least myself, I try to form a picture of what was going on at those times. But it wasn't just agrarian. They also had cities. Somebody had to build those cities. And they had to have materials to build those cities. And we hear about things made of metal. And when we hear about Narada Muni, for example, when Narada Muni left home as a little boy, actually, that's another thing that astounds me. He was only like five. The other thing is, every one of these pastimes, I have questions. I say, what? Now, he was the son of a maidservant. Well, he was in a gurukul. I wonder why. I thought you had to be in one of the three upper classes. But it says that he was in the gurukul. Anyway, he left home, and then he just took off. He's 5 years old, and he just takes off and just starts walking. And he sees everything. He goes everywhere. He's walking through jungles. He's walking through all kinds of everything. There's tigers in there. There's poisonous snakes and scorpions and tarantulas and lions and tigers and bears. There's everything out there. And he's just walking along, seeing all of these things. And he's seeing the cities, and he's seeing mines. So I went into the database and I looked up mines. It comes up quite a few places, actually. There's mines. There's miners. I don't know if they're coal miners, and they may not be under the ground, but they're mining somehow or other. They're getting metals. So that's going on. There's some kind of industry, apparently. Otherwise, what do you do with a mine? I mean, Prabhupada would also talk about how different places, the ocean provides gems. pearls, of course, we know about pearls, but apparently other kinds of gems also. And the mountains also, they produce gems. I guess that tends to be where they get them these days, emeralds and rubies and whatever, these kinds of things, diamonds. Of course, they come from the mountains. So I suppose that kind of mining, of course, also goes on. So this is some way people make their occupations also, because this is another aspect of it. I'm thinking, just like in this verse today, we're hearing about, so some brahmanas may be poverty stricken, and not because that's their choice necessarily. They haven't chosen the occupation of just gathering grains in the marketplace in the fields, but somehow or other, they're not able to support themselves. Just like we're hearing about Sudama Brahmana. So they were so poor, they couldn't even eat. Which is another thing makes me think, well, what happened? Where's all the charitable people in their neighborhood? Nobody's feeding them? And maybe they're living out, you know, by themselves. Another part of the picture we get is the Brahmins often, they didn't tend to live in the cities so much. They lived outside, maybe even in the forest. Even the Brijbasis, they lived out in the forest. One thing, Indra, he was criticizing Krishna and the cowherds. He said, these people, they live out in the woods, you know. They're uncivilized, which is true. We hear about not that they're uncivilized, but that's how they were living. We hear in the Krishna book how, in the Bhagavatam, there was problem in Gokul. Krishna started in Gokul, so they decided just to take off. Oh, there's this place, we'll go out there. That's nice, there's a river out there and whatever. But there's nothing there. And what do they have? They have some bullocks or oxen and their carts. So they take off and they go part way. If I remember correctly, I think they made it to Chatikar, which is now where the Agra-Delhi road meets Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, that area. They spent, I think, a few months there. So what they do? They circle the wagons, just like in the old times. And that's how they lived. And I had an experience many years ago. I was working when I was in high school. Actually, I helped somebody bale some hay one day, do some kind of farm work, and we had to ride to some pasture on the back of just a flatbed, like an ox cart kind of thing, and it didn't have any springs on it. I tell you, that was the roughest thing. I think I just broke a few ribs just riding on that thing. It's a rough ride riding on that thing. So maybe the Brijbasis had springs on their carts. I don't know. Otherwise, it's really a rough ride. But look at what they had. They had their cows. That was their wealth. They had their cows. And of course, it seems like when they got to Vrindavan or Nandagram out there, then they increased their opulence. There's a diagram you can find on the internet, actually, the layout of Nanda Maharaj's house. So it was a big house with so many rooms and so on. So they had to build that. They started with nothing, but Krishna provided, of course. Like we would say, everything comes from Krishna. Well, naturally, it's Krishna's house, so everything was provided. So anyway, these things, somehow, what did they do? They had their cows, so they got so much wealth from the cows, they traded. And of course, they must have had the agriculture, too. They must have cultivated the fields. But then you have to get the seed somehow. They have to trade for the seeds, and you know how it all went on. Who knows? It's such a mystery. But we know that one thing is that because they had the cows, and they could trade, and they could get so many things. So somehow or other, sometimes people are poverty stricken. So getting to the point of this verse today, the brahmanas sometimes, because they're poverty stricken, well, Krishna wants to see them taken care of. So even if you're someone, now here this verse kind of paints the picture where there's two sides. Either you're a poor brahmana or you're somebody in Maya making money. Kind of the way it's presented here. You're a brahmana, Krishna conscious brahmana, or you're somebody with money who's in Maya. Of course, there are some in-between states. You know, you can be money and you can be Krishna conscious at the same time. Anyway, that's the way it's presented here. Because the idea is that even if you don't have some wealth of spiritual assets to draw on, Krishna will give you those spiritual assets if you take care of the brahmanas. Even though your mind is absorbed in your occupation and you're just making money and you've kind of haven't gone to Mangalarti in a while. And if you support the Brahmanas, here it says, Tad Uddharishi, I think that's the word. Yes, I will uplift in the near future, not Chirat. Chirat means after a long time. So not Chirat, not after not a very long time, in the near future. Apadbya, that's the word here. Apadbya is translated as from all miseries. And what does it say? It's the same thing, yeah, in the purport. In the translation, it says, rescue from all calamities. So, apadbya, in the near future. So, this is another one of those. It's like the word liberation. I come across the word liberation all the time, and I'm never quite sure what it means. So, what does this mean exactly? In this lifetime, or when I die, I'm not going to have any miseries, or... I guess the way you take it is, well, Krishna is saying you're not going to suffer, so don't worry about it. How he's going to do it, when it's going to happen, what it's going to look like exactly. Just relax. Krishna's going to take care of everything. Mahasuchaha, just like he says in Bhagavad Gita. Just like, because Arjuna could be second-guessing Krishna when he says, just surrender to me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. And Arjuna may be thinking, what about... You know, Krishna says, Mahasucha, puts his hand out, don't worry about it, taps him on the head, just relax, I'll take care of everything. It's like if you have a wealthy benefit, you have so many bills, oh, my car broke down and I'm behind on the rent and this and that, and then your rich uncle comes and says, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it, go take a nap, it's okay, relax. So Krishna wants his brahmanas to relax. Preach, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, chant and be happy, don't worry about it. Of course, that's what Prabhupada did, didn't he? And we believed it. He said, don't worry about it. Just surrender to me, surrender to my mission, surrender to ISKCON and spreading Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will send everything. So many times Prabhupada said that. We don't have to work hard, and he would sort of brag about his devotees. And none of them are doing any work. They're not working, going, getting up early in the morning and rushing here and there at neck break speed to go to work. But Krishna's giving everything. And he would sometimes say, he said, just like our neighbors in Los Angeles, they're envious of us. Why, we're not working, but we have so many cars. They can't figure it out. Why we're not going to work, but we have so many cars and this and we have everything. Because Krishna is giving everything. Of course, it makes you wonder why the Brahmins are poverty-stricken. This is for maybe just so Krishna can teach lessons. A lot of times it seems like Krishna creates certain situations. This is what I come across a lot in the Bhagavatam. I say, well, why would this person do that? Or why would this person say this particular thing? A lot of times I think that the psychology just doesn't seem right, the way people sometimes react to certain situations or certain things that they say. I'll give you one example. Narada Muni, of course, Narada Muni has been with Dhruva Maharaj. And then Narada Muni, then he goes to see King, his father, Uttanapad. So King Uttanapad, of course, he's in misery. His five-year-old son has just taken off, disappeared into the woods. So Narada Muni says, so how you doing, King? Everything okay? So I think, well, how could you say such a thing? His son has just, disappeared into the woods. So apparently the idea is that Vyasadeva or Shukadeva Goswami is just setting up a dialogue or creating, or maybe just say, well, that's the culture. They would speak to each other that way. Still, another one that really surprises me is when Vidura, he knew about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and the disappearance of Krishna and Balaram and everybody. Then he goes and he meets the Pandavas and he speaks to them, but he doesn't tell them about it. It's like the half of the world just disappeared and you don't say anything. And the verse says, because, something like calamities come of their own accord or something like that. But I'm thinking, well, how could he possibly not say such a thing? So anyway, sometimes these different things come up. So just like here, you think, well, how can a Brahmana be so poverty-stricken? How could Sudama Brahmana be so poverty-stricken? He was Krishna's best friend. He was his best friend in the Gurukul. And we know how tight bonds you form with your friends in the Gurukul in times of hardship. I had that experience going through certain hardships in the military school in the summer. So you get really close friendships with people when you're tramping through the woods with no food for a few days or something. So when you go through hardships together, then you have friends, close friends. So how could Krishna's close friends be poverty stricken? Well, we know there are many reasons these things happen. There may be karma, or it's just Krishna's plan. So here, we can take it, Krishna gives us the opportunity to help people who are in that situation. We shouldn't think that, that person is sinful. We all have sinful pasts, and our karma comes to us in different ways, or Krishna gives it to us in different ways. So we benefit. That's the idea. We benefit by helping people. If we have money, so being charitable is so important. There are certain lessons, especially qualities, that one is supposed to gain in the different ashramas. So household life especially is meant for learning charity, of the different qualities that are important for human civilization and for devotees. Brahmanas are supposed to learn to be charitable, to have charitableness. So Krishna says here, even if you're not quite up to the devotional standard that the Brahmanas are, I'm going to deliver you from all miseries if you support those who are struggling but are my Matparayana, who are directly my devotees. So it's quite an amazing thing, actually, what Krishna is saying here. It's just like when Prabhupada would say, just because your son is a devotee, then you will be delivered. We know how this, you know, so many generations of your family will be delivered. So you think, this is one of the things also that it's amazing to me. I think, well, what, this person, you know, they haven't done anything. They may be so sinful, just like Hiranyakashipu. Of course, we know the whole background, but still, the lesson there is that because his son was a devotee, he was going to be delivered, even though he was so demoniac. So this is so astounding. So what is it? It's just Krishna's mercy. Sometimes you can just give it away. I remember when I was a kid, there was a show on television called The Millionaire. Some of you may remember that one. So the whole, every episode was, there you hear about somebody's sad state, and then there's this millionaire benefactor that comes into their life, just out of the blue, actually. I think he had someone working for him who just somehow his agent would go give these people $1 million so all their problems were solved. So there was really no connection, just somehow it touched this millionaire's heart and he helped them. So Krishna's heart becomes touched and he responds in different ways out of his own mercy. He doesn't have to follow any rules. He has the prerogative, it's out of his own initiative. He can do whatever he wants. So this is, we see this as an example here. If you help his devotees, then it pleases his heart. Even if you may not be so much up to the standard, then he'll deliver you from all miseries. Oh, the verse again. Samudharanti ye vipram sidantam matparayanam tan udharishye nachirad apadbhyo narivarnavat. Just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift brahmanas and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. Oh, let me look over here. Let's start with Aramiya Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just a bit of a sequencing question. Because you mentioned Vidura came to visit the Pandavas and didn't speak about Krishna's departure, but Arjuna also came back and he did, so it must have been close.
It seems that Vidura arrived before Arjuna did. Arjuna was gone for 7 months, and that's what we hear in chapter 15 or 14, first canto, where Yudhishthira Maharaj is thinking, why? Arjuna's been gone for a long time. Then he starts seeing all these inauspicious signs. Then later, of course, Arjuna arrives. So it must be that after that, while Arjuna was gone, apparently, is when Vidura arrived. And he talked about his pilgrimages and different things. Actually, he also preached to Dhritarashtra at that time. That's when Dhritarashtra took off. That's another one of these amazing things. You think he and his wife just take off. Or is Narada with them? I think so. Maybe. But anyway, Dhritarashtra is blind, and he's just lived a pampered life in the palace, and then he takes off for the Himalayas and go north. If I were taking off, I think I'd go south. I think I'd want to go to South India rather than the Himalayas. It's already cold enough in Vrindavan. What to speak of going farther up Delhi? It's freezing. I don't know if it was. That's another thing I thought about the Brijbasis. I wonder if it was that cold back in those days, because it's cold in Vrindavan in the middle of in this time of year. Anyway, so they take off, and then we hear, I think this Narada, he's telling Yudhishthira. He says in something like, I forget what it's like, just a short time. It says in a week from today, he will attain perfection, basically, by practicing yoga and getting rid of, you know, amalgamating the material elements of his body into the totality of the elements. And I'm thinking, well, how did Dhritarashtra learn how to do that? When did he learn how to do these things? So Dhritarashtra also during that time, Vidura preaches to Dhritarashtra. So that's it seems like Vidura arrived during that period while Arjuna was in Dwarka. Vidura. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
One technical point is, you had three verses today.
Oh, you're right. I didn't read the last two.
Yes.
Let me read them. They don't have purport, or do they have a short purport? Okay, I'll just read the translations. Actually what's happening now is we're transitioning from talking about the Brahmanas into talking about the Kshatriyas. In fact, I was thinking that maybe this verse had something to do with Kshatriyas supporting the Brahmanas, but that doesn't come up in the purport. Vishwanath doesn't make that point either. Anyway, just as the chief bull elephant protects all other elephants in his herd and defends himself as well, similarly, a fearless king, just like a father, must save all of the citizens from difficulty and also protect himself. Purport. Lord Krishna, having concluded his discussion of brahminical duties, now describes the character and activities of a king. Protecting all of the citizens from difficulty is an essential duty for the king. In text 46, an earthly king who protects himself and all citizens by removing all sins from his kingdom will certainly enjoy with Lord Indra in airplanes as brilliant as the sun. That's a favorite hobby in the heavenly planets. We hear about that in several places. They like flying around in their airplane.
Well, one thing I thought of also is if the Vaishyas, they're after usually accumulating wealth, and that generally there's an envious act nature that happens when you try to accumulate more and more. So if you give in charity to the Brahmins, it helps become near Matsara, and then the threefold miseries don't exist. So you're giving up some of your envy to do it. So there's all those subtle points. And I was saying with Sudama Brahman, when I was reading about that not too long ago, it said that he was very attached to austerity. So imagine Krishna wanted to give him things a couple of times and it wouldn't work. But this time it was for his wife because it was his wife who asked for it. So he gave everything to his wife basically. And imagine later on that Sudama Brahman, when he went home, he still slept on the floor. You know how it is, sometimes people like their austerities. And
well, you get used to it.
He really wanted his, he liked his austerity.
Don't feel comfortable in a soft bed. Actually, the whole idea of, just like I was thinking, so who's the wealthy people who can give? When you think about, there's four vinyas and four ashramas, or there's eight. So among those, there's only one ashram that has any money, the grihasthas. And there are only, I guess, two varnas, the kshatriyas and the vaishyas, that have money. So either you're a grihastha vaishya or a grihastha kshatriya, you're the ones that have to give money. Otherwise, nobody else has any money, generally speaking, right? Shudras get just enough to live on. And The Brahmins, they don't. They're not making money. I've always wondered this in Bhagavad Gita, where it says, the fifth or sixth chapter, where Krishna talks, the unsuccessful yogi. So what happens, Arjuna asks, what happens to the unsuccessful yogi? So he gets his birth, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe. So Suchinam means a brahmana, and Srimatam means wealthy. So I tend to think of this as, well, that must mean the Vaishyas, Srimatam. I think it's devotees tend to think of this as Vaishya. Otherwise, you don't tend to have wealthy brahmanas. But this is considered a high birth. But later, Krishna includes the Vaishyas among the low, you know, Papa Yonaya, Studio Vaishya Satashu Das. So apparently there are different kinds of Vaishyas. You can be a rich Vaishya also. Someone who's more involved in trade. And even, I was talking about mining, so who's doing the mining? I guess it's the Vaishyas that are doing the mining. They're selling their jewels. They're the goldsmiths and so on. So maybe they get some wealth that way. Whereas another Vaishya is just tilling. He's living subsistence agriculture, basically. He just has a cow and a couple of acres and taking care of himself that way. That's one kind of Vaishya. So he might not have so much to give. But apparently there are also wealthy Vaishyas in the Vedic culture, because also, you know, they're in the construction business, some of them, apparently, doing the building and overseeing the trades and so on. How the whole thing works, it's so hard to figure it out. I have to get a time machine and drop in. Dharmaraj Prabhu.
So if you actually think about it, it appears as though like the Grihasthas and the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, like, they have more austerity to perform than the other ashrams in one sense, because, yeah. So.
You know, one time I remember hearing, this was way back when devotees were doing life membership in India, and Prabhupada, maybe it was something devotees said, or Prabhupada picked up on it, that there was a kind of an attitude that the devotees who were doing life membership had towards wealthy people they were going to see. Like, these people are all in Maya, and they were like looking down on them. And Prabhupada didn't like it. He said, no. Because what Prabhupada could see was that, like, a hippie mentality. You know, he didn't like the way the hippies were living. They weren't working hard. And he appreciated, no, these people are working. They're going out and they're earning this money. And you shouldn't look at them in that way and look down on them, because they're being responsible and the money is coming and so on. So, yeah, they're performing their austerities and they're getting rewarded for it, but you want to just be a hippie and get stoned and, you know, sleep in the park and so on. So we don't favor that over working hard and earning your livelihood, especially if you're being charitable with it. Actually, that's another thing I think of. We talk about the different levels of brahmanas and so on. In one sense, we all want to be brahmanas. Then I think, well, maybe we should encourage more people to be money-making vaishyas, because we sure need a lot of money. There are a lot of projects. There are a lot of projects that need money. And it'd be nice if we had devotees making lots of money, especially if you have some project that needs money. And, of course, Prabhupada said it will come. You know, there's a one letter Rupanuga wrote to Prabhupada about, I think it was about finding that gold mountain or something. Anyway, getting gold, creating gold. And Prabhupada said, we're not interested in that. He said, we could do it, but it's not good. He said, we'll fall in Maya, basically, is what he said. If we have too much wealth, then we'll just fall in Maya. Well, Krishna gives us what we need. Anyway, go ahead.
So therefore there's a huge difference between being lazy and being responsible.
Yeah.
So that's like a very distinct, you know, mm-hmm, point of consideration.
Okay, Krishna Kripa Prabhu, and then I'll go over here.
So many interesting points you made, thank you. you're talking about the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and I remember one place Prabhupada explains that Brahman has three different aspects, the impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. So the Brahmanas may just know the impersonal Brahman or the Paramatma, but the devotees, they know Bhagavan, so they're, mm-hmm, like the highest level of the Brahmanas.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you're talking about who can actually give in charity, and it's one of the six duties of the Brahmanas also to give in charity. So sometimes people give the Brahmanas too much, and they give They give the
extra. Yeah, so the Brahmanas do get things.
And Advaita Acharya is famous for being a very wealthy Brahmana. Right? Mm. So. Of course, he's the, you know, the owner of all wealth, the Mahavishnu. But
his father was the Raj Pundit, I think. Correctly, right. Means the king's personal guru, you might say, pundit. So he was well taken. He came from a good family.
Another point you're talking about, maybe we should make some more vaishas because we need more money. I was hearing one class where they were talking about how the Protestants, they would try to train, and I think it was England, they would try to train people to be preachers, and the people who weren't cut out to be preachers, they were trained to be bankers. financial people. I just wanted to thank all the people who gave me donations to help my travel. And in 2005, I was going to Mayapur to study Bhakti Shastri, and like people in Alatra gave me like $2,000, and I was able to study Bhakti Shastri and go to Europe and India twice. And I'm very indebted to everybody. You're absent who contributed. Thank you.
Over here. Madhumatipu.
You were talking about how they ate, you know, collected the barley and, you know, what was their diet or whatever. This morning I was reading an article by Bibi Govinda Maharaj. So he was saying that how he was in Vrindavan and was wandering around, and anyway, he ended up Rajendra Kumar Tulsiwala, you know, the Tulsiwala. And so the Tulsiwala asked him, "Oh, what are you doing?" Like he said, "Well, I'm looking for some great soul." And so he said, "Oh, I'll take you." So he said, "Oh, let me buy a green papaya." So he goes and buy a green papaya and he gets him on the scooter and he goes to this place somewhere in Vrindavan. And this person, he introduces them and everything. And so he said, you know, so this was his schedule and this is what he ate. So he would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and then chant till 5 o'clock in the evening. He would get up and whatever, wash his mouth or whatever. I'm not taking a bath, but 4 o'clock, get up in the morning, chant till 5 o'clock in the evening. And then he would boil one green papaya and boil it and offer it to Krishna and then had that. And then he would offer so many obeisances and then chant again till 1 o'clock at night. And that was his program, eating one boiled papaya. And the fact is that because people knew that this is what he did, I guess people would bring that green papaya to him, you know, and that's how, you know, so I'm assuming that's how, one of the ways, I guess, that people knew, okay, these are Brahmins, if they had, they would donate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway.
Guru Prasad?
You know, in India, their culture, they really respect the Brahmins. When Narada Muni made Magari the hunter, all the people went to see him and he took so much stuff for him. So when I was living in India, we'll walk through the fields, and when the people cut the grains, it wasn't like they had to go pick up each individual grain. Grains grow on, you know,
and get the whole stock.
Yes, stock. So there'll be many stocks. So, you know, a Brahmin for an hour could get a whole bag of stocks. You know, it wasn't like so difficult. So I was thinking in the earlier days it was the same. And the same,
it's like shopping at Sam's.
Huh?
Like shopping at Sam's Club, you get big. Yeah. It comes in bulk.
And the same thing too, the Brahmins, you see them with their bags, they go through the fields, vegetable, and there was lots of vegetable in the field. And I asked one man, I said, "Is this your field?" He go, "Oh no, we're Brahmins, we can go through and pick whatever we want." Uh-huh. So it probably wasn't that difficult, I would think, you know.
Yeah.
And then I've seen them go, you know, to the people who sell vegetable in there. You know, in the roads and stuff, they go with their bags, and the people automatically give them something. Mm-hmm. You know. Or someday, if we're on a rickshaw, they come and say, "You know, can you give something there?" You know, it's a culture that respects. You know, so I don't think they were always starving. I mean, like you were saying, maybe Sudama Brahmin probably liked the austerity, and some of them really liked that. And so I think And even now, in here in America, the people who are making tons of money are the people in the, you know, I don't know if you call them Vaishyas, like the computer wallahs and stuff. I mean, sorry, computer person. They are the one that makes millions of dollars, except for hours per day and stuff. So, you know, there are tons of money going around. You just have to learn how to get it and distribute it to the Brahmins or the devotees.
We got three hands back here. Yes, all the way on. Of course, apparently, according to this verse, there were poverty-stricken Brahmanas.
Yeah, I'm sure there were.
Of course, but still, it says you should give to them, so maybe they were poverty-stricken, but still, they had enough to eat because people were charitable. So you can be both. You can be poor, but still have your needs met because people are giving to you.
Thank you, Prabhu. So when I was hearing about this, about the Brahmanas' qualities, I just wanted to share that recently I was reading the chapter of Sudama Brahmana. So I guess it was the last verse where I read that line. When I read it, I got surprised. Wow. So that was like the last trace of Sudama's pride was that he was a renounced Brahmana, was also gone when he saw Krishna's submission to his devotees. So I got surprised when I read that line. So I would also like to get some insight about that more from you.
How Sudama Brahman, who is so advanced, he still had a little bit of pride. That's the question, how he could...
Even that renounced?
Yeah, proud that he was renounced. Maybe that's just another lesson. We try to think the highest about everyone. Just like Lord Brahma, you can see certain faults in him, but still he's the head of our sampradaya. So sometimes these things are displayed. Krishna displays them for different reasons. Or one can be very, very advanced, just like Bharat Maharaj. So he was experiencing bhava. He was on the platform of bhava, and he still fell down because he was attached to a deer. And even, you know, when you hear that story, you think, well, gee, he really didn't do anything wrong. I mean, poor little calf, little deer, so helpless, took care of. What's wrong with that? He's so compassionate. But he got distracted by that. There was a material attachment somehow, and he got distracted, and it ruined his spiritual life, not completely, but for a time. So it just shows what it means to be completely pure is not an easy thing. These little residual aspects of our millions of lifetimes in this world, there's still some vasana. That's the idea is it's etched into our consciousness, certain materialistic ways of thinking. So pride can be there. Like Prabhupada said that you can, you know, the last snare of Maya is to want to become God. So you think someone's really pure, but then they still have this idea somehow. So pride, that's a kind of pride, of course. Well, that seems to be the idea, that you can still have a little, you know, so these specks of problems, their contamination. And Krishna was teaching a lesson. Or that's a lesson about the acharyas have taken that lesson from that pastime. Krishna astounded him so much by his mercy that then he lost all his pride. The last speck of pride was taken away. That's Krishna's mercy also. He purified that. That was hanging in there. That was hanging there. And Krishna got rid of it.
I was thinking about so many devotees in our society, you know, from the very beginning up until now, have a propensity, perhaps, for being a Brahmin, study, learn. They're willing to be austere. This comes naturally. I think that's how it's meant to be. And yet, due to the pressures of needing money, they have to kind of go against their natural dharma. And it's been such a frustration and difficulty. And now you have, you know, young people coming up. They want to basically be devotees in all day long in a strict way, but they're pulled. So with the Brahmins that are confined to the laws of the Brahmin, which means they can't take salary, isn't it? They can't take salary from someone. Brahmins, isn't it said you can't take salaries? It can't be paid if you're a Brahmin.
Yeah, well, these are all old rules that we don't follow, some of these things.
Yeah.
Brahmins can't take showers?
No, salaries.
Oh, so, I thought you said showers. Salaries, yeah.
Yeah. So these Brahmins that we're talking about here, that they're confined to that dharma, that varna, and so they have this austerity, even though they probably have the ability to make money and to, you know, they're smart enough to do what the Vaishyas and people can do, but they're forced by in that restriction that they can't go out. And that's quite an austerity in and of itself, that you just voluntarily are poverty stricken.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how it all works. It's quite complex.
Yeah, because we don't live in ideal times, so it's hard to. Things don't always work out. You end up doing things that are against your nature. It's difficult. Oh, I thought Himavati. You know? No?
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. It also stated that a devotee, when they surrender to Krishna, he takes everything away. So we are like, is that considered devotees, like, because they're so surrendered to Krishna, so he doesn't give us too much stuff, he just take it away. Like Sudama, he was very dedicated to Krishna, so he didn't give him much wealth.
I'm not hearing the question. What is the question exactly? Krishna doesn't give the devotees money? Is that the basic question?
Yeah, like, because the devotees, we are so surrendered to Krishna, so he doesn't.
Devotees are surrendered to Krishna. But the idea is that, of course, Krishna says if the devotee needs some help, then I take the money away because I get too attached to it. So the idea is, of course, that Krishna, he deals with each of us personally, individually, according to what we need. So for one person, he may provide opulence. And for another person, he may take it away because that's what the person needs. So it's not that we can look at it just as one thing. I mean, there is an aspect to it where, of course, what Prabhupada would say, well, Krishna will take care of you. He'll give you what you need because you're his servant, obviously. If you're living in a rich man's house and you're his servant, you're going to get fed and you're going to be taken care of. So that aspect is there. But he may not give us a lot of wealth if we don't know how to use it. And he may also take it away sometimes for his reason, to help us surrender to him more. Which, of course, is the way that Prabhupada saw what was going on in his life. So, I don't know. That's one perspective on that. All right, we're past time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.